giant of limitless power at man's command. And where was it science found that giant? In the atom, a particle so infinitely small that it takes over 100 billion atoms to make up the head of a pin.
This is Out of the Basement, a podcast dedicated to radiation medicine.
This is Dr. Jason Becht coming at you out of the Vermont Mountain Basements, as always. And this time, we have a very special mini-series on low-dose radiotherapy for specifically osteoarthritis, but can be extrapolated to many other things, and very special because this is sponsored by our friends over at Extrol, which we will talk about later, but given that they are German and sell orthovoltage machines, I literally don't know if there's a more perfect tie-in, but we'll, again, talk about them later on. So this is planned to be a four-part mini-series, at least here on Out of the Basement, and then a fifth question and answer session that will be done with the crew over at Extrol. And I'm going to try to make this as quote-unquote evergreen as possible, because looking at the metrics, whenever we do one of these episodes, either over here at the Accelerator podcast, the people really love this. And I just don't understand why people love this so much more than me yammering on for 180 minutes about some pedantic thing that I found interesting from 1990. But let's start with history, because again, I really think that people don't know just how far back low-dose radiotherapy really stretches. And I often reflect on this myself from my medical school days. And the first time I ever actually heard about this, I was sitting in my M1, my first year of med school anatomy class. And I remember my anatomy professor talking with derision about how the old-timey idiots back in the 1900s would treat ankylosing spondylitis with low-dose radiation. And we all guffawed together as if how much more advanced we are now and how much better we are. And it is with that story in mind that I plan to start the series with this episode of history and secondary malignancy and the flaws of the linear no-threshold model. And then we will move into the next episode with setup and treatment planning and delivery. And then the third episode will be coding, billing, all that fun stuff. And the final episode of the mini-series, of course, will be the evidence, which people like evidence for some weird reason. But I think we all forget how long we've been doing this, because I don't know about you guys, but I always think that it's the year 2000, or at least that's how I do all my math. Whereas someone born in 1960, they must be 40 years old. That is wrong. Time does not move that way. But as many of us hopefully remember and celebrate with a cake, candles, we have Wilhelm Röntgen, our good friend, also German, discovering the X-rays in his lab in 1895. And I have always loved this story. Now, who's to say if this is really real, this particular story, but here is one rendition of the night X-rays were discovered and why I don't bring my wife to work.
In early November 1895, Wilhelm repeated the experiment in the dark in his lab at the University of Würzburg in Germany. But then he noticed something happening far away from the Crookes tube, a screen coated in barium platinocyanide. The fluorescent material that was used on photographic plates was sitting on a chair near the experiment, and every time Wilhelm turned on the electricity, the screen glowed. Not quite believing what he was seeing, he dedicated his time to rigorously testing and documenting the strange rays, which he called X. He put objects made from different materials on photographic plates and exposed them to X-rays, and found that the mysterious rays passed through some, but not others. Eventually, a few days before Christmas, he asked his wife to help him in the lab. Anna held her left hand on a photographic plate for 15 minutes, while Wilhelm beamed X-rays at it. According to legend, she said, "I have seen my death," and never set foot in his lab again.
Of course, I have hindsight and am biased when I say I would never invite my wife in a lab to shoot x-rays at here, but maybe it was a different time, and who even knows? But I generally frown upon experimenting on your spouse, but that's just me. And so over the years of me doing this, I just keep going further and further back and finding more and more things, which, because the Germans have really pioneered a lot of this, it has required me going into the German literature and trying to find ways. Often there are English translations, but in many of the earlier things, of course, there are not. And it's trying to find ways around that if I want to get them. Currently, I am having the AI chat platforms translate things for me, which works sometimes. Sometimes it doesn't work. Always it is interesting. But here is a introduction from a paper. As you listen to this, guess what year this paper was written in with how it starts.
The use of the Rntgen ray in the treatment of rheumatic diseases is not new. Soon after the therapeutic employment of Rntgen rays in the field of medicine, reports of their effect on diseases of the joints began to appear. In 1898, Sokolow reported improvement of 4 patients with arthritis he had treated with Rntgen radiation. Stenbeck, 1898, treated 52 patients, most of whom he said were improved. For the following 25 years, numerous reports dealing with this subject appeared scattered in the literature.
The answer is 1941. So this paper is from the Journal of the American Medical Association, JAMA, published on May 3rd, 1941, titled Rntgen Therapy for Rheumatic Disease. And I think this paper is notable and relevant for us because, one, they literally started using x-rays, radiation, to treat, they call them rheumatic diseases, but arthritis or other degenerative inflammatory diseases 3 years after discovery, actually less than that. So that's always the key part too, is that x-rays were discovered in November of 1895. So basically the end of the year. And it was 3 years or less later that they were using it to treat degenerative inflammatory disorders of the musculoskeletal system. And even in 1941, like any of us would write this paper the same way when we're trying to just hand wave through an introduction of, oh, here are the first couple. And then over the next 25 years, various things were published in the literature. Now, beyond my amusement that this paper starts the same way that I or many of you would start writing a paper in modern times, it is important because it opens with kind of a recounting of multiple papers published that demonstrates benefit to radiotherapy for inflammatory disorders. So I'm careful there to not say necessarily low-dose radiotherapy, and we'll talk to that in a second, but obviously there was different equipment and they were using different systems of measurement, and so it's a little bit hard to do a one-to-one, and I would say they were using higher doses than what I would use now, but they had generally good outcomes. And also, because this was a literal 100 years ago, they weren't using specific grading scales, like the visual assessment scale, the VAS, or other sort of rigorous sort of measuring devices. They were much more qualitative, and they were literally, we'll say, things like generally good results or excellent results. Little grain of salt there, which even this 1941 JAMA paper acknowledges. I would imagine that perhaps by the onset of World War II, maybe they had a better pain assessment scale, but probably not, because we're not really good at treating pain. But anyway, so this paper lists just maybe 4 or 5 different papers published just in a short couple of years in the mid-1920s, so again, a century ago, totaling 885 patients with a wide variety of arthritis, family, degenerative inflammatory disorders. And they are very consistent, actually, with what I would say today, where the papers that do give an estimate say perhaps 70 to 80% response, good to excellent. And there was an absolute monster paper published in 1926 by an investigator who treated 5,000 patients with various kinds of rheumatic disease. Now, this is interesting because they treated things like gonococcal arthritis, gouty arthritis, septic arthritis, things that I wouldn't necessarily recommend today. But regardless, 5,000 people treated with radiation for various types of arthritis in 1926 is pretty impressive. And this is one of the papers that does report the outcomes as Excellent. Now, at this point, I would hope that you are asking, Jason, how did they treat these people, these thousands of people with arthritis, with radiation, to see such generally excellent results? And I'm glad you asked, because that ties into our sponsor, Extrol. But we'll turn to this paper, their methods, or what they call the method of study. And they go on to describe, because this particular JAMA paper was not just a review, it was their own study. And I was curious myself when I first found this paper of how did they do this? Because remember, back in the day, there was a lot of radioactive isotopes, radioactive sources, because the first patient treated with a clinical linear accelerator did not happen until 1953. And looking through this methods of study, we come across the second page of the article. On all patients, the same technique of Röntgen therapy was employed. Physical factors: 200 kilovolts, 175 kilovolts constant potential equivalent, 0.5 millimeters of copper, and 1 millimeter of aluminum filtration, 50 centimeter skin target distance, minute output of 50 Röntgens measured in air, usual size of field approximately 15 by 15 centimeters, with the dose being each field was treated three times, receiving 200 Röntgens at each sitting. The treatments were given every other day. The total dose was thus 600 Röntgens. Such therapy hereafter will be referred to as a series of treatments. Most patients were given three series of treatments to the same parts, each series being separated by 4 to 6 weeks. The number of joints treated in any series varied from 1 to 6. In some cases, new parts were treated after three or more series had been given to the original locations. And that, my friends, is how this series can be sponsored by Extrol. And all this early research, all this early treatment on radiotherapy for arthritis and other inflammatory benign conditions, all done on orthovoltage. And everything old is new again. And this obviously very much fell out of fashion here in America with the advent of the linear accelerator, but this is still used quite routinely in the rest of the world, as in daily, the orthovoltage treatments with the Extrol devices. And I know for a fact, I have firsthand knowledge, that there is low-dose radiotherapy for osteoarthritis being done in America with Extrol orthovoltage machines, being reimbursed by insurance and Medicare, also literally daily. And the weird thing to me is not a lot of American rad oncs even really get to experience this. I guess that's not weird to me, but so where I did residency at Yale, we had an older, we'll put it that way, orthovoltage machine, but we used it all the time. We used it for a lot of keloids, which is the start of one of the starts of how I got interested in all this. But if you've never used an orthovoltage, they're incredibly easy. They don't take up anywhere near as much space as a linear accelerator. And I can also promise you that they are significantly cheaper than a linear accelerator, not even in the same stratosphere. I say this as someone who is working on replacing my existing linear accelerator. And I long ago promised myself with any of these sponsorship type things that I would only do this with companies and things and products I love or trust, which is why you'll never hear me do a Spacer ad, by the way. But go to Extrol's website. They actually have a great YouTube library as well, which is where you can read about all these things. But this is why this came about, or one of the reasons why, is that all of this stuff, literally thousands of patients, were treated with orthovoltage devices. And let's try to drill down into this technique a little bit, shall we, by switching over into a different paper from a seminar. This is titled Röntgen Therapy in Arthritis, Bursitis, and Allied Conditions. And this paper was presented at the 32nd annual meeting of RSNA, which is crazy to me because that was in 1946. So we're doing this in the order that I did this in real life when I found all these things. I read that methods and I said, wow, that's a little confusing for my 2024 American brain here. And So in the introduction of this paper, we have Röntgen therapy of arthritis is by no means new, since the history of this particular field has been dealt with by several authors. Suffice it to say that as early as 1898, the subject was mentioned in the French, German, Russian, Swedish, and Swiss literature. As far as we could ascertain, the first American authors dealing with it were Anders, Deland, and Fowler, who published a preliminary report of the treatment of arthritis deformans with Röntgen rays in 1906. I'm really trying to drive that point home where within 3 years of X-rays being discovered, they were used to treat arthritis with radiotherapy with reportedly good success. And it was used in America as early as 1906, or at least reported. And you have thousands of patients treated with radiotherapy for conditions like arthritis published in the literature by the 1920s, 1930s, and undoubtedly many more that were not published, I presume. We'll never know, obviously, but at minimum, thousands made it into the literature. And the way they're talking about these, both this paper and the prior paper were written in the 1940s, and they're writing it like how we would write about this today, how in that the Red Journal review a co-author on, this is the same language we use, where we just kind of say, people have been doing this forever. And this is not new. It wasn't even new back around World War II. But the methods of this paper, interestingly, both these papers spell technique with a T-E-C-H-N-I-C. I'm not quite sure what that's about, but I found this paper fascinating because the methods start with, while in general, we do not believe in standardized technique for any one disease, yet most of our cases received essentially the same amount of therapy. A pause there. Medicine really has changed a lot. I find that is a fascinating sentence that we could write a book about. We'll leave it alone for now, but they continue with, we have available a 200 kilovolt, 175 constant potential equivalent, and a 400 kilovolt machine, and osteoarthritis is generally treated on the larger machine. The two are used interchangeably as necessity rules. And then they go on to write similar orthovoltage parameters as the prior paper with the thickness of the copper and aluminum filters and so on and so forth. And the field sizes they generally using were 10 by 10 or 15 by 15 centimeter. For dose, they write spinal areas received 3 times 150 Röntgens in air on successive days or 3 times 200 Röntgen on alternate days. For the smaller joints, the same dosage and intervals were used, or smaller doses applied to both anterior and posterior ports. And they also talk about how most patients received one series of treatment, but about 40% had 2 series and a small number 3 series were spaced 4 to 6 weeks apart. No patient in the study were treated more than 3 times, although we would give 1 or 2 more series after an interval of 6 months if indicated. With this amount of radiation, no permanent harm is done to the skin. For those of you who remember physics, you will probably remember that there's no direct way to translate these orthovoltage Röntgen doses from 100 years ago into the modern gray equivalent, with Röntgen being measured in air and gray being measured as the absorption of 1 joule of radiation energy per kilogram of matter. You could really do some hand-waving and say 1 Röntgen is 1 rad, and 1 rad is 1 centigray, so 100 centigray is 1 gray, and 200 centigray is 2 gray, and ergo 200 Röntgen is 2 gray, or 200 centigray. That is definitely not how this works, but it works close enough to say that I think this is way too high of a dose, and not one that I would use now. Now, you do have to adjust a bit for the dose depth curves for orthovoltage at this energy with the 200 kilovoltage or 400 kilovoltage energy that they're using. There's a little bit of a dose difference, not a one-to-one, but I think that the modern LDRT for osteoarthritis is different, and I personally will do the 3 gray delivered in 6 every other day fractions, so 0.5 gray per day, and I wait 12 weeks to reassess and either give a second course or hold that second course in reserve until we need it. To again drive it home, the whole point of this section is to highlight the fact that within 3 years of discovering X-rays, they were using radiation therapy for conditions like arthritis, 1898. It was done in America in 1906. And by the late 1920s, there had been several thousand patients treated with and published on, available in the literature to this day, with generally positive results for radiotherapy for conditions like osteoarthritis. And that's astounding to me, because there's very few things in medicine. Medicine is a technology-driven endeavor, and there's not a lot of things that were invented or discovered in the 1800s in medicine that we still use now. And in the 125 years that radiation's been kicking around, we've been using it to treat degenerative inflammatory conditions for most of it, which is quite remarkable. And almost nothing has a track record like that, like with the scalpel, sharp objects to cut into people. We're at that level. And yet it's still in America extraordinarily underutilized. And I've tried to go back and figure out just how many people has there been reported on in the literature being treated with radiation with arthritis, just results aside, which again seem to be generally fairly positive, really positive. But now the problem is, for me, I don't speak German, which is a huge hiccup in my goal of counting people. And obviously there are papers in other countries and things. And I can tell you, if you try to have ChatGPT translate an entire dissertation written in German, it's slow. It might crash on you. I just have to keep waiting for the next model. So my best guess is I was able to go back relatively concretely and say between 2024 and 1923, there's about 12,000 patients treated with radiotherapy for arthritis. And I would say a pretty safe bet would be somewhere between 13 and 15,000 patients in the literature have been treated with radiotherapy for arthritis. And again, the majority of those are positive results. In the final episode of this series, we'll deal with those silly European randomized trials that were, spoiler alert, hot garbage, that were negative from the 20 teens here. But as we cross over the 20-minute mark here, I will pump the brakes on part one of episode one, and we'll see you over at part two of episode one to talk about the follies and fallacies of the LNT model, the linear no-threshold model, as well as the greatly misunderstood risk of secondary malignancy or of the radiotherapy itself causing cancer. Spoiler alert, hormesis is real, and no case of secondary malignancy has ever been reported in the literature from anyone who has been treated with less than 10 gray. How's that for a cliffhanger?
The opinions expressed in Out of the Basement are solely the product of their creator. Even if it's stated otherwise, you should independently verify that statement and take nothing for granted. Like Stone Cold Steve Austin always said, don't trust anyone.
This has been a Photon Media production. Don't forget to like and subscribe on whatever platform you use to listen to us. Be well and be mom.